Blog Talk Radio.
On the Shelly Nunchuck Show. It's a Wednesday night. Well, I guess it would depend on where you are in this world. It could be evening, it could be morning, it could be afternoon, but it is 9 p.m. Standard Eastern Time, and I'm waiting for my guests to call in. It is going to be a super awesome show tonight, and I'm very pumped because there's going to be lots of stories to be told by my guest, and I'm so super pumped. The telephone number to call, and I will give out in a little while. I'm still waiting for my guests. You know how I do. We talk, we chat. I should have some tea and crumpets, you know, or at least I have my oolong tea, but I'm drinking a little bit of a soda tonight because I am so tired and wired because I'm overtired. And it was a crazy day at work today. But I have to admit, I am very blessed, you know, to be able to get the guests I do for my show. As my show continues to grow, you're going to see even more amazing guests from the indie world up until Hollywood and anywhere in between. And also what I'm able to do is actually to give back in my own way. And one of the ways to give back is to, for the foundations that I'm starting to become part of, and there's one that I am actually going to bring up while I'm waiting for my guest, about one of the foundations that I'd like to talk about that is very dear to my heart. It's called the Sarah Joy Foundation. So I just want to bring that up here. It has a Facebook page. And, of course, I'm a little bit of a tech tard right here, trying to type and talk at the same time. Don't ask me to chew gum while I'm doing my radio show because I don't think I could handle it. But anyway, the Facebook page, if anybody wants to talk, check it out, is the Sarah Joy Foundation. And my nephew's wife, who passed away, I believe, at the age of 32 over a year ago, passed away from breast cancer, and she really couldn't get treatments when she was pregnant with her son. She decided not to because she wanted to, you know, make sure her unborn son would be harmed. Eventually, she had lost her life to breast cancer. And what the Sarah Joy Foundation is, it's to help families, you know, with terminal cancer, to help, you know, pay for bills, maybe from outings and such. We have about 564 likes on the page, and hopefully this will continue to grow. And I know that the Sarah Joy Foundation has helped about 4 families so far. So I'm praying that this will help, you know, to give back and be part of this and keep announcing it on my show. So I've been, you know, I've been a very busy bee. And I've been filming and stuff myself, and I think, let's see, okay, I've got, okay, all right, hold on for 1 second. I'm multitasking here. I told you I'm kind of a tecton. Colin. Okay, I'm just typing to my guest. Hold on for 1 moment, ladies and gentlemen. So here I am typing, sending messages. Okay, and as you all know, I run the show myself. I run this whole entire show myself. I get the guests myself, and I network, and I do everything myself. And this is one thing I really feel very blessed in. It's something where when I'm doing my show, I got to admit, one of the stunt people that actually first came to my show as a guest, Johnny Crane, he actually had said to me, follow my bliss. And that's exactly what I'm doing, and I want to give that advice to all people out there that have dreams, follow your bliss. And, you know, for once in my life, I'm on a failure with my talk show, and I had this awesome, one of my ninja pals say that, you know, I'm like, I guess this older gentleman that did talk shows like Dick Cavett, and he says, I remind him of him, and it's like my show, he also said, one of my ninja pals said, you know, there's no show like mine out there. So I guess I'm doing pretty well, and I've had over, I know looking in the reports and stuff, I had over 55,000 people have tuned into my show, and it's growing, and I've done about over 105 shows. But let's see, there is a caller in the queue. Let's see if this is my extra special guest tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, this is John Hagner.
Hi, John, thank you for being a guest on my show. Thank you.
Oh, I'm very pleased to do this.
I have been so super excited, and I couldn't wait to have you on my show because I am dying to hear the stories that you're going to tell me.
Well, okay.
No, it's just I feel like a little girl because it's something where the work you've done your whole life and other people too, growing up as a little girl, I always tell people I've never wanted to be Barbie. I've always wanted to be a ninja. And I've watched the work of stunt people, didn't realize who they were for many years, and here I am getting people like you, great people, stunt people, men and women alike, on my show. So I'm very thankful for that. I feel like I'm reliving my childhood right here on the air.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good.
And before we get into a little bit of stories, you know, I know for the viewers out there, young and older alike, people, I want people to know from the words of yourself, you know, to know about you. And how did you get into the stunt business? How old were you?
Well, actually, I got into the business as far as professionally in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
But my training for stunt work began a long time ago. I was about 12 years old when I really got interested and excited about the stunt work, the stunt business. 12 years old.
Wow!
And the way I really got interested and excited about it was that every Saturday morning, the movie theater not too far from my home back in Baltimore, I used to walk up and down the alleys of my street and the streets, and they used to sing a song called "Pennies from Heaven." Now the reason I did that was to hopefully get enough money, make enough money, to be able to go to the movies to see what we call the old cliffhanger serials. And the serials back then were from the Republic, Columbia, and Universal Studios. And especially in the Republic serials, mostly the action was done by some of the best stuntmen in the business back then. So I would walk up and down the streets and the alleys, and I'd sing "Pennies from Heaven." And believe it or not, people would throw pennies out the window, and I'd make as much as 25 cents by just doing that, singing the song over and over and over again. And back then, it only cost 11 cents to go to the movies. So I'd make a quarter. I'd have enough left over for a hot dog and a Coca-Cola. So that's where I got excited about wanting to become a stuntman, because I noticed, I think pretty much at that young age, that I would see an old John Wayne Western, or he did a couple serials back then, too. And then I would notice that, well, he didn't, that doesn't look like what, it doesn't look like him who just fell off the horse or something, or just got hit and fell over a table in a bar or a saloon. And so I kept watching the action more closely to find out, was it John Wayne doing that, or who was it that was doubling him? And it turned out, soon after that, I found out there was a great stuntman named Yakima Canutt. And Yakima Canutt was actually his stunt double back in the 1930s for the old B-Westerns, what they called them. Mm-hmm. And he would double John Wayne in the more more dangerous scenes. And I've even seen some of the films. I've got them on DVD and video and everything. And there'll be a barroom fight between John Wayne and Yakima Canutt. So they'd be in a fight, and John Wayne would get punched and fall backwards over a table. So they would yell action, then Yakima Canutt would be the bad guy that he was fighting, and he'd throw a punch to John Wayne, and John Wayne would go back and hit the table, then the director would yell cut, and then they would put the hat on that John Wayne was wearing in the costume, and Yakima would take the fall backwards over a table. And the reason I knew that wasn't John Wayne back then was because once in a while the hat would fall off, and Yakima Canutt back then had a bald spot on the back of his head. And John Wayne then, before he had a toupee, he had pretty much beautiful wavy hair. So I said, well, I know that's not John Wayne.
Oh, anyway, my God.
That's how I got more excited about who's doing what for what picture or what serial. And I started following it and following it. And as a matter of fact, I was about 13 or 14, and I wanted to find a book on stunts. So I went to the main library in downtown Baltimore one night, and I said, I want to get a book on stunts. So they came out with about a half a dozen books on party tricks and party gags. I said, what? No, I want to get a book on stunts. Stunts in the movies, you know, they had no idea what I was talking about. I tried to explain it to them, and they had no idea what I was talking about. So anyway, I said, well, I can't use them. That's not what I mean. So I went to the Saturday matinees pretty much every Saturday, because the serials were done in chapter form. So you'd have to go back the following Saturday to see what happened at the end of the first chapter that you would see, and how did he or she survive that. So I spent a lot of 25 cents every Saturday. But back then, the only song I knew was Pennies from Heaven. So I think people threw pennies out on Saturday just to get rid of me. I don't know, but.
Oh, no. That's how that
started. And then I realized, well, these guys, these stunt people, got to be in good shape to do what they do. And so I started going to the YMCA in downtown Baltimore and a couple days, 3 days a week and three nights a week, and working out on weights to build my body up and bulk up a little bit. And in the gym itself, with the mats and the rings and the parallel bars and I trampoline, I learned a bit about gymnastics and tumbling and hand balancing. I got into hand balancing really because I saw an act, a duo called Ronald and Rudy. And they were the most fantastic hand balancers that I remember ever seeing back then. So I got into learning that and got a partner and wound up being bottom man on a duo hand balancing routine. So I did all of that, and as a matter of fact, I remember probably a couple times, I wanted to see how many people on the mats, how many people I could do a running dive and roll over how many bodies, people kneeling down. And I don't know if it's a record, but I did a dive and roll over 14 people.
No, really?
So That's over 15 feet, yes. I did it more than once, and I remember doing that. So many things that we did, when I say we, I used to have a couple fellas who wanted to get into stunt work, too. They didn't follow through with it, and I was the only one out of the three that did. But they used to come to the Y, and we'd work out. And so my interest in stunt work began really when I wasn't even a teenager. Yeah.
So you went to the gym. You started at the gym when you were under 13 years of age. They let you be, I mean, nowadays I think you have to have a parent sign in if you're under 18. Was it different back then?
I don't know about that. I know I was anywhere from 12, maybe 13 years old. And then that they did sign, but I didn't know about that. But I learned a lot about physical development and keeping in shape and don't smoke and don't drink and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it all started there. As a matter of fact, television was just starting pretty much after that when they had a television station called WBAL. I think it may have been the only one at that time in Baltimore. And they had talent contests. So my hand balancing partner and I, his name was Frank Gaines, and he was top man, I was bottom man on the in the duo. And we called ourselves the Fran John Duo. So we entered the talent contest, and I don't remember if we won or not, but we did a beautiful routine, I think. We may have won, I just don't remember. And from then on, we got offers to do parties and weddings and things like that at that young age. And that's pretty much how it all started. The stunt business for me entering into it didn't get started until I moved I got married much later on after I got out of the Navy. And we had a son, and he was 3 years old, and we packed up and moved to California in 1958. And also, all during that time we were back in Baltimore, I became an artist for the Baltimore Sun Papers. And I was in their commercial art department. But I wanted to get into the stunt business so badly that I was willing for us to take a chance and moved to California.
Wow.
Because they didn't have anything at all such as making movies in Baltimore back then. So that's what we decided to do in 1958. And I remember we moved, we came there, we moved there on a Greyhound bus.
Really? Just by a bus?
A Greyhound bus, the three of us. And no sooner than we got situated in Los Angeles, West Los Angeles, when I start soliciting for jobs as an artist with art services and art studios. And the first week, I did some freelance artwork and did very well doing that. And I mainly wanted to do the artwork more than anything else first so that we'd have income. And then that led into until 1960 was when I got involved in becoming a member of Screen Actors Guild, which you have to be in order to work in the movies or on television. And I did. I got a membership into Screen Actors Guild by accident, and that was when I was over at Walt Disney Studios and near Burbank. I used to go to the studios with 8x10 glossies and show pictures to the casting offices whenever I could get in of me jumping and rolling and flipping and things like that. And this one time I was over at the Walt Disney Studios and waiting in the lobby to see the casting director, and this fella came out, a short fella named Rex Rossi. And he saw me showing pictures to the lady at the reception desk there, and she didn't know me, and I didn't know her, and I said, well, I'd like to see the casting director. So Rex Rossi walked up to me and says, hi, I'm Rex Rossi. What's your name? So I told him, Johnny Hagner. He says, let me see those pictures. So I showed him a half a dozen pictures of different things, and he said, oh, are you with SAG, with Screen Actors Guild? I said, no. I'd love to do that. He said, well, have you got about an hour to kill before you go and see the casting office? I said, sure. So he said, okay, let's go out and get on my motorcycle. And we did. And went over to a trailer park. He had a beautiful modular mobile home. And introduced me to his wife. They were also from rodeo. And they did trick roping and riding in addition to the stunt work.
Well,
but he was involved in the movies, too, doubling a cowboy named Bob Steele. So he says, well, let's go outside. And we went outside. He says, throw me a left and a right to the jaw. So I did. Well, actually, what I did was I bent my knees because he was only 5 feet six, and I'm 6 feet two. So he said, now, and this is funny, isn't it? So he said, throw me a left and a right to the jaw. So I did that. But he said, don't do that. He said, when you're fighting a short guy or a tall guy, you're throwing the punches, and the guy's going to adjust to it.
Yeah.
And the camera won't pick up you bending your knees.
Yeah.
So I did it. Just stand as tall as you are and throw the punches. But I'm short. He said, so throw them down at me, and the camera will shoot the angle that will make it work. So I did that. He said, no, you got to do it full speed, because I was kind of a little bit cautious. I didn't want to hit him, and I knew that you had to throw what they call pass blow punches. If you're throwing to the jaw, left or right, you always threw to the outside of the opponent's shoulders.
Yeah.
So that way you're about 6 inches away from his face. That doesn't always work, but most of the time it does. If it doesn't work, then your opponent's out before he's supposed to be out.
Yeah.
So I did the punches and everything. He said, now, let's do it full speed. So we did it full speed. And he said, because the camera can put any speed they need to anything like this. So I learned a lesson that one day that I'm so happy and grateful to him for were teaching me these things. So then he says, well, we have to get you in AGVA. AGVA is another union called American Guild of Variety Artists. And AGVA is for doing live shows. And when they did rodeo, he and his wife, they were under AGVA. They had a card for AGVA. So he said, we'll go over there. I know a fellow over there. So we did. And he introduced me to him, introduced me to him. And he said, Johnny's going to need a card because he's going to work with me. So the guy knew him and didn't know me. He said, oh, okay. So he pulls out a card and he types it out and I signed it. And he said, that'll be $65. So I gave him $65. So then Rex says to me, okay, let's get back on the bike and we'll put it over to SAG. I said, I just joined AGVA for $65, okay? So we go over to Screen Actors Guild and he introduces me to the guy there. He says, Johnny's working with me on a couple rodeo shows and he needs SAG because I'm going to recommend for a job in one of my westerns. So the guy says, oh, okay. So he makes out a card and I sign it. He says, that's $150.
Oh, my gosh.
Shelley, today I think it's like $3,000, maybe $4,000 to become a member of Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah. And that's why
I may be wrong.
Wow.
Are you a member?
No, not yet. I'm working a non-union now, but in the future, you know, if I get even bigger, because I do my own stunts and such too. Like I do, you know, things. I've taken horseback riding lessons and I know how to shoot guns and I was in an archery league. So the stuff that I have talent for and a little bit of martial arts, and I'm actually filming a film now where we're working on it and I'm playing one of the leads, a Valkyrie, and we're going to be fighting like bad things, and you know, it's one of those superhero things, so I feel very blessed to be able to do this, and that's why
good for you.
That's why I love you guys. I respect the stuntmen and the stuntwomen, you know, even animals, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a big deal to me, and I understand about aches and pains, about bruises, and it's to give you guys more respect because I think, you know, starting out, I mean, was it rough around that time? Did stunt people, did they get a lot of respect, or was it more towards, like, the actors? Did they take all the, you know, the spotlight?
Yeah, well, back then, back then and even before 1960 when I got in the business, a stuntman was really not recognized by the public. And the main thing was the studios wanted the people to think that it was the star or the actor that's doing the action. And even before that, like in the 30s, they wouldn't allow a stuntman to have his picture taken with the star that or the actor he's doubling.
Wow, no way.
They definitely would not allow any picture taking of the actor and the stuntman together.
There was one
legendary stuntman named Richard Talmadge. He was a dear friend of mine. I wrote a book about Richard Talmadge, too. And he used to double for Douglas Fairbanks Sr. back in the silence. And
oh, man.
There was a rule, not a law, but there was a rule that he was never to say he doubled Douglas Fairbanks Sr. And not just him, but other stunt people could not pass the word around that, oh, I did that. I did that for him, and I did that for him, you know. But then all of that changed after the 1960s. Now every stuntman gets credit on everything that's done.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Did you get recognition for your work, or did you have to keep quiet too?
Did I have to do what? Get recognition or what?
Did you get recognition for your work, or did they make you, were you not able to talk about your work?
Oh, no, not at all. No. As a matter of fact, tell me when I'm saying too much and talking too fast. Otherwise, if I'm talking too fast, then I'll start singing because I do that too. But
that's
I charge a lot extra for that. Probably you don't. What is one of your favorite songs?
Oh gosh, I'm trying to think. I don't know. Do you know Cyndi Lauper?
Oh yes, I do. He's
really?
A very nice guy. He's a very nice guy. Just a joke.
I know.
Oh, you know what? You know what?
Pulling my leg.
Shelly, you know what? You're too
what?
Young for me to talk to you about singing songs that you know. Okay. I mean, I'll sing it even if I don't know it.
Well, you probably have a nice voice because a lot of singers nowadays in the business, not everyone, but they do something with auto tone. And I kind of been trying to find other singers where you go back, and I was trying to listen to, like, Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, that's my background. As a matter of fact, I taught him all he knows.
Really?
No, not really.
Okay, you're pulling my leg.
I always admired him when I was growing up. And the songs, as a matter of fact, I'm with a band here in Moab called The Happy Notes. And we play every 3 days, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday every week. And a couple days a week at the hospital, we play for them. But the music we play goes back to the Sinatra days and even before him. So that's what we do. We're called the Happy Notes, and I said, well, I'd rather call us the Happy Nuts, but they wouldn't go for that. So. Happy Notes, you know. But we're getting off about the conversation, the stunts, okay? So where do we leave off?
I think we were talking about after with the SAG card and you paying $150 and of, you know, stunts.
Oh,
like
yes,
if you got
$110 for a Screen Actors card. I hold that card now, and it's active since 1960. And as a matter of fact, you wanted to get into SAG. I would take you over to see the guy at Screen Actors Guild, but I think he's dead. So you left to see somebody else.
I would hope so.
Well, he was old when I was there. You know. That's another story, though, you know.
Yes, so
how much time do we have on this program?
I don't think there's going to be enough time. It's 2 hours, and I'm like, I know you have so much to talk. I'm going to have your guests, too, so we'll try to cram as much as we can tonight. And
I leave it to you? I'll leave it up to you to ask me some questions rather than me, keep talking.
That's okay. I mean, that's how some of my show goes because I like to have my guests, talk about themselves. It's like having a conversation. That's basically like we're talking on the telephone. And I was just, I think of questions in my head. And, I was looking on your Facebook profile, and I had a couple of questions. I love a man in a cape and a ninja or a cape. And I saw something. I was like, oh, he's playing some sort of superhero. Can you tell the people about it? I think the name was either Action Man or something. Can you tell people about that?
Oh, the red, white, and blue costume?
Yes.
Yeah, that's me. I invented that character. I guess it was back in 1978 or something like that, Captain Action USA. And I used to do live shows for different organizations like Muscular Dystrophy and things like that. And I had some young stunt people that were learning to be learning. I started an academy called the Stunts Galore Academy, and then I would get these jobs to do shows, live shows for organizations, and one like I said was Muscular Dystrophy, and so that's what we would do a lot. So I tried to introduce that to television stations years ago. Stephen Cannell, he did several TV series, but they weren't interested. But so that was Captain Action, but USA. But when I was over 20th Century Fox and did my first stunt in 1961, it was on a TV series called Adventures in Paradise, and it starred an actor named Gardner McKay. And they called me over. I was managing a trampoline center in West Los Angeles at the time, and they called me over, and I had just gotten my Screen Actors card in 1960, and they wanted me to do a high fall for Gardner McKay. And you were asking me earlier if, when I got started, did I get recognition for doubling somebody or doing a stunt for somebody?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes. And because the day that I showed up to do that dive off a cliff had an area on the 20th Century Fox lot called the Lower Moat, and the moat mm-hmm. is actually a lake where they had the ship, the Tiki, it's called. That was Gardner McKay's schooner, and they had a mock-up of that in this at this lake. But where they wanted me to do the fall was on a sound stage that they built it to look like a high cliff, rocks and cliff. And the idea was for me to do a dive off the cliff to represent a 200 dive. But the height was actually from the top to where I was going to land only 38 feet. Now, not only 38 feet, but 38 feet is over three stories high.
Oh, my, what?
Now, I had never done a 30-foot fall because I was working mostly on trampolines and managing the trampoline center and teaching trampoline, but trampolines rebound once you bounce on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I went over for the call, and I met Gardner McKay, and so they sent me over to Ward Pullman. They costumed me the way he was dressed, and I came back, and see, I had no knowledge of any texture with working for studio. So I was always cautious in any questions I would ask, or I would just mainly I was a listener that day. So I reached into my bag, which had some knee pads and elbow pads, and we call them a stunt bag. And I pulled out an 8mm camera. Now, I don't know if you're allowed to do that, but I said, you know, I'd like to get, I was talking to one of the prop men, I'd like to get somebody shooting me doing the dive off the cliff. Edna McKay was standing right behind me. He said, oh, give me the camera. I'll shoot it. Now, he's the guy I was going to double. So you would think that he would, if anybody, he would say, no, I don't want anybody to know you're going to do this for me. No, he said, oh, give me the camera. I'll shoot it. So that's where I can tell you that, sure, I got recognition that day.
Oh, good.
So the next question was, the assistant director walked over to me and said, what do you need to do this? And I said, well, I need some cardboard boxes, because I did check into all of these things a few years ago as I was growing up and wanting to know more about what you land on when you do things like this. I said, I'll need two rows of cardboard boxes and a couple mattresses on top and all of that. So he got the prop men to go and bring that stuff and set it up. And so then he said, now, what's this going to cost me? This is the assistant director. And that shocked me because I had no idea what to tell him. And I didn't want to talk myself out of the job, my first job. So I said, well, let me go up to the top, to the where I'm going to come off of. So as I was going up, I'm counting feet, you know, stepping up 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot. So when I went up the top, it was like 35 or 40 feet. So I said, I figured $10 a foot. That's what I figured. Nobody ever told me anything about that. But I said, 3,500, I mean, 250. Okay, you got it. So I was right on the button.
Wow.
So
it's really
McKay,
a lot of counting. It's really a lot of counting when you're doing stunts. It's really a lot of counting, isn't it, when you're doing stunts?
Oh, it was for me. It probably was never for any other stunt guy. Because they probably knew a lot more about it when they got in the business than I did today. But like I said, I didn't want to second guess too much. There were two things I was guessing, and that was can I have this filmed, and the other one was $10 a foot. Well, that's what the guys were charging back then. So. So I got up to the top and stood on the sidelines, and Gardner McKay does his acting before the action takes place. And so they filmed that, and then they said, okay, let's do the fall. And a director yells up to me, can you make this look like a 200-foot dive? I said, it's only 38. I'll hold it as long as I can before I have to tuck and land on my back. Because when you're doing a dive or a fall, you never land on your stomach because you'll snap your spine.
Ooh.
So you always tuck and land on your back. So
okay.
I said, I'll hold it as long as I can. He said, oh, that'll be great. That'll be great. So the actor, Gardner McKay, did his acting, and then I came in, and I simulate the step he takes before he's supposed to dive off the cliff. And when I did that, and I did the dive, the fall, and tucked and landed on my back, and got an applause, which I didn't expect, and a big smile from me, and I shook Gardner McKay's hand because he filmed it for me. I still have that film, too. And from then on, I got to double Gardner McKay for the last year and a half of that series. So that was my start in the stunt business.
So what do you have any, like, really good memories? Like, what was the favorite film or TV series that you've actually got to work on?
Other than Adventures in Paradise?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, during the time of Adventures in Paradise, Batman started on TV. So
Batman?
Batman with Adam West?
No way. You really worked on...
I did. Well, I'll explain something this way to you so you'll understand. I got a phone call from my answering service, which is the answering service for stunt people and actors called Teddy's. And now they have Nina and a couple of others, but back then it was just Teddy's. And Teddy's call is, Johnny, they want you over 20th over Fox to double Adam West on a TV series called Batman. They want you over there for the interview. So I went over, and I met two other stunt guys. One's name was Roy Jensen. And Roy Jensen was a fantastic stuntman. He was very big and bulky like a football player because he was a football player for the Green Bay Packers back before he got in the business. And the other fellow was Hubie Kearns. And Hubie had been around 15 or 20 years before then. And So he was over for the interview, and I was. So we went into the producer's office. William Dozier, I remember, was the producer of Batman. And we walk in, the three of us. I'm shaking hands with them, and I just heard about them. I didn't know them, and they didn't know me, the other two guys. And met William Dozier, and we're standing up facing him, and he walks over to Hubie, shakes his hands. Ah, Hubie, good to see you again. So then he went to me and says, what's your name again? So I said, Charlie Edgar. And then he says, oh, good to meet you. So then he said hello to Roy Jensen because he knew Roy. So then he says, well, we'll let you know. So we left, and I came home, and I said, well, I don't have that one. I saw myself getting the job as a stunt double for Adam West Batman, because back then I was doing trampolining and tumbling, and that's what Batman was doing in his comic strip. Now, Hubie Kearns came from, he was with USC or UCLA, I think it's USC, and he was a track star in hurdle jumping and all of that. And like I said, Roy Jensen was from football background. So I figured, boy, I've got this tied up. I can do what they're going to want. Well, I didn't get the call, but Hubie Kearns called me about 2 or 3 weeks later. And he says, Johnny, says, I'm doubling Adam West on the Batman series. And if I can use you anytime, I'll give you a call. So that went on for another 3 or 4 weeks. When Teddy's called and says, they want you over at the Batman at Fox, Hubie had put in several calls that I got and several jobs I got playing a henchman, playing myself as a henchman for the characters like the Joker and the Riddler and Mr. Freeze and, oh, Penguin and all that. So I worked several episodes of that thanks to Hubie Kearns. And another series that was going on at the time was Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Oh,
at
my
20th Century Fox. But the interesting thing was they did a feature film, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea,
mm-hmm.
and it starred a very famous character actor back in the 40s and 50s, Walter Pidgeon.
Mm-hmm.
So Teddy called me one day and says, they need you over at Fox to double Walter Pidgeon. I said, oh, great, okay. So I went over, and I met him, and he had a mustache, and I didn't have one. So they explained to me what they wanted me to do for Walter. Did you ever see that feature movie, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea? And that's a very famous actor's.
I know I've seen it a long time ago. I saw the series. I watched many adventures once because I remember when TV before cable, and when I would have like this little TV, I'd be sitting on the floor with the TV, and I remember having rabbit ears, and we did watch Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. It was on Sundays. I watched all the reruns, and I remember watching, you know, the submarine, the adventures in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea with the submarine.
It was a wonderful series, like Adventures in Paradise was. But they called me over to double Walter Pidgeon, and this was in the feature, on the feature. And it had people like the actress who starred in Jeannie, I Love Jeannie or something, TV series, and the famous character actor named Peter Lorre, and a famous rock singer back in the 50s, Frankie Avalon, and a whole bunch of well-known people back then. Anyway, the stunt I was to do for Walter Pidgeon was, he was the admiral on the submarine Nautilus, and he smoked cigars in the feature, and supposedly he falls asleep on his bunk in his cabin, and the bunk catches on fire, and so they called me to double him, lying on the bunk as it's being set on fire. So that's what I was called in to do for him. And you can see me doing that, and then as I come out, it's actually him. They're helping to come out of the cabinet, the fire out and everything. But so then they start up with the TV series maybe a year or so after the feature. And that starred David Hedison was the lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
And the admiral, I can't recall his name, but I was called in to double David Hedison on a few of those episodes, too. So I did most of my starting stunt work at 20th Century Fox. And
wow.
Then it branched out to, like, Universal, Columbia, and, let's see, what did they do? Oh, Warner Brothers. I did a lot of work over at Warner Brothers, too.
I know that Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, I remember David Hedison because he was also, and I believe, with Vincent Price in The Fly.
Right, yes.
Yeah, that was him. And I was like, when I was younger, I thought he was cute. I mean, it was just something because, you know, he was the leading guy. And
yeah.
I have been watching your work then because I used to watch Batman, and more than likely, now that I know, you know, I'll be looking for you if I get to watch it or if it's on Netflix, I'll be looking for you. And I'll be like, John, I'll be doing that because, yeah.
Well, the costume or the outfit I always wore on those Batman episodes was a navy skull cap, you know, a blue one, navy blue. And then a blue turtleneck shirt and pants, trousers. That was the outfit I always wore. But those were fun shows. And the funniest thing about the stunt guys working on that series was, you know, if you remember anything about that, when they would throw punches,
mm-hmm.
they would say, be flashing up on the screen, pow, and bang,
yes.
and stuff like that. Well, you know why they did it for two reasons, because it was funny. And the other reason was Hubie Kearns used to say to us when we would get into a fight, he'd say, now, hey, when you're throwing punches at me, miss me by a foot or two because you're going to splash these captions up over your punches anyway. He says, I don't want you to hit me. So we got a kick out. We could throw a punch about 2 feet away and they would do that. We would almost laugh every time we get into a fight, but it was a fun show.
Oh, man, I knew it. See, there's a connection, because Batman, you worked on a Batman series, and I worked on two independent films on a Batman series. So we got a connection.
Sure, sure. Maybe I could have doubled you, or you could have doubled me. I don't know.
How
tall are you?
I'm 5'8".
No, you couldn't double me.
I could put on some Frankenstein shoes.
Size what?
You know how like Frankenstein, like the older Frankenstein, he had the big boots and they were really big?
Yes.
That's what I could wear.
Well, between you and me and the audience listening in, John Wayne only wore 9.5 boots. See?
That's
and he was 6'4". 9.5 boots. Now, this is what I was told. So I don't believe that.
Well, he had a little foot then, didn't he?
Yes, little feet, yeah. But I don't believe that, really, so. You know, you're told a lot of things, and you have to believe what you feel, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
now,
I wanted to know, I'm looking up, I mean, there's so many people I want to bring up to you because there's a couple of things I wanted to bring up about you to our listeners besides your stunt work, a couple other things, but I just wanted to put up a couple names and maybe on another show bring up some more names if we have time and such. But I was, you know, trying to look up older, you know, generation of stunt people and was trying to, you know, look on Google. I wanted to know more about them and to be able to look about them. And I figured you're a person the go-to person for these names. First name I've come across, I believe, was Ronnie Rondell.
Ronnie Rondell was considered one of the most outstanding stuntmen in the business. And he did some fantastic stunt work on many, many series and many, many feature films. And so he's been around a long time. He's pretty much retired now, but we're in contact with each other by mail mostly or phone calls. And, yeah, he was one of the, in my opinion, one of the legends. He didn't go, doesn't go back to Yakima Canutt and Cliff Lyons and Davy Sharp and people like that. But he was one of the legends. He's one of our well-known inductees in the Hall of Fame, too.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. It's like these names, because, like, I have a feeling I know these people from somewhere, and at that growing up, because we didn't have cable, I still had black and white TV, and we had two knobs. On the top was UHF. I forget how it went, and one of the knobs, I forget, there was only two knobs, and on certain stations, and you'd have to turn them, and sometimes the knobs would come out. It was UHF and VHF. So more than likely, I'm just sitting here wondering if I've seen some of these people's work, and I'm going to try to learn more about them. It's amazing, like, you know, networking and talking with you, and I did see some of your work. So it's sitting here going, this is amazing. You know, all your stunt peeps, I've grown up watching your stuff, and here I am, you know, sitting here talking about Batman, and I love Batman. And you're on the show, and I'm like, it's like another thing, another connection. It's like you're on the Batman show, and a stunt guy that I loved very much, well, not stunt guy, martial artist, was Bruce Lee, who played Kato, and the Green Hornet and Kato made an appearance on Batman. And it's like this wonderful connection with the universe, and it's like, wow, we're all kind of connected together.
That's right. You're right about that,
That's amazing. That made my whole day, just you mentioning Batman, because I love superheroes, so this is going to make me sleep really good tonight. I'm very excited that you told me about that. And just bringing up more names, like, I think you mention Harvey Perry? Is that a name that you mentioned a little while ago?
Harvey Perry? Harvey Perry was one of the old-timers starting back in the silent film days. And when sound came in, and Harvey was working a lot over at Warner Brothers, there was a famous Warner Brothers star named James Cagney.
Mm-hmm.
And Harvey doubled for James Cagney, and they became very good friends. So Harvey was another short fella, and Cagney was short, too. So they were good size-wise, and they looked a lot alike, too. So that was Harvey doing the more dangerous action for James Cagney in his films.
Wow. And that was all the
game. There was, like, Humphrey Bogart over at Warner Brothers. There was my friend Duke Green, doubled Humphrey Bogart, and a lot of other people like that. And Harvey doubled a lot of other actors and stars as well.
Wow. And is Harvey, is he still alive?
No, Harvey passed away about 20 or so, maybe 25 years ago. Yeah, he was a very dear friend. So many of these people like Harvey and Yakima and Davy Sharp, and I can go on and name 40 or 50 guys that I became associated with and friends with through my interest in wanting to honor them in a way and have a museum or a Hall of Fame, and that I did, and that I still do.
That's what I was going to bring about names. That's what I was leading into. I think you read my mind, because my point of also bringing up these names was mm-hmm. something that you started yourself was the Hall of Fame. I think it's called Hollywood Stuntman.
Hollywood, yeah, it's Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame. And
so
I founded that.
I guess you're answering that. I was going to ask you, how did you get that started?
I founded that in 1973. And in 1964, when I was a member, one of the original members of the Stuntmen's Association of Motion Pictures, I wrote a book in 1964 called Falling for Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written seven other books on that subject since then, and they all have been self-published. I've self-published all of them. But Falling for Stars got me the idea that the people I've met so far as the stunt people and the stunt guys and gals back then, I wanted to start preserving some of their memorabilia. And so I started asking some of them if they had anything they would give me so that I could start a Hall of Fame for stunt people. And that's where it all blossomed out, so that the stunt guys would give me some of their memorabilia. And that's when it all started in 1970, even before that, maybe in late 1960s, when they started giving me things that I remember going over to one stunt guy's house named Tom Steele. And Tom went the old serial days with Davy Sharp and Duke Green and Harvey Perry and Dale Van Sickle. I'm mentioning a few names just to bring them up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went over and asked Tom Steele one time, just to visit with him, that's right, just to say hi and see if he had anything he wanted to contribute to my dream of starting a museum. But first of all, it was going to be a stuntmen's museum. So his wife, Kay, answered the door, and he said, oh, Tom's back in the garage. So I went in the garage. And Tom used to make furniture. He loved to do that on his off time. And he was writing some designs or sketching some designs for something he was going to make out of wood, a chair or whatever. But he was doing it on the back of serial scripts, the original serial scripts. So he would tear off a page and start his sketch. And so, and I said, well, what are you doing, Tom? He says, oh, I'm going to build this, whatever. I said, but these are your serial scripts. And he says, oh, I need scratch paper, so I'm just using the back. I said, don't do that. Give them to me. He said, what are you going to do? I said, I want to do this museum for you guys. And he says, there's a whole bunch over there. Take them. So I have the serial scripts and the movie scripts and the cowboy scripts that he gave me that he had worked in. And other guys like that. Today, they're really valuable and irreplaceable, and I've got them. So it started that way. And then I said, what else do you have you want to contribute? He says, oh, how about my holster, my gun belt and holster over hanging up on that nail there? And he gave me things like that and one of his cowboy hats, and it all blossomed from that. And so now I have thousands of items of memorabilia from all of these stunt people and movie actors and stars that they gave me. So that's what we have, the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame, and I moved the whole thing up here to Moab in 1988. They asked for me to come up and talk to me about the possibility of relocating from the California area, and that was good because we were not doing well at the locations where we had it back in California.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally, they went to the expense of bringing me up, and I liked the idea of it being here, and because they've done a lot of movies here since 1949. And so they moved everything up and me and all that, and it all started that way. And we were there for about, well, from 1988 through 1995. And then we had to give the building back to the city. They wanted to use it for something else. We were just getting financially well off at that time, too. But that's the story, that the way it goes, you know?
Yeah.
So we are now in storage, and storage is here in Moab. And
really?
I'm reorganizing and recataloging everything. So for the day when we have the funds, enough funds so that we can reopen here in Moab or wherever. But that was a dream that I started actually in 1969. But in 1973 was when I founded it, and we had some wonderful stars and actors and stunt people on our first board of directors back then. Some of the most famous people we ever heard of, John Wayne and Gregory Peck and Jimmy Cagney and those people. And they joined forces with us, and I've been at it since 1969. 73 we incorporated, so still at it.
Well, I'd love to, you know, John, like promoting and such. And I talk really well when I, you know, about stuff that I love. And this is stuff that I love about stunts and martial arts and such. If you need any help promoting, you know, to try to get funds, if you need to talk about it, I can write about it on my Facebook page. If you need some help in that, I would love to help you out. I mean, that's stuff that I love.
Well, you're probably a dream come true for me and for our members at the Hall of Fame. If you would be willing to think about that further and help us in any way, we need to raise funds. We're a California nonprofit and have always been since 1984, and we do need financial help to be able to reopen. And if you feel that you're able to help us with that, I'd be very happy to welcome you to do that.
I would love to talk about that.
I would like to invite you to be on a board of advisors.
Oh, really?
Now, that doesn't financially obligate you, you know. It's just that you're willing to help and to advise and all of that. Would you do that?
Oh, yes, definitely. I would be so honored. Yes.
Okay. I forgot. You have to do a 200-foot high fall backwards, but...
I would love to do that. You set it up, I'll do it.
Well, you're one of us that would love to do it. I wouldn't want to do it. Well, I invite you to do that, to be on our board of advisors, and this is something I'll mention to our board of directors, but really don't need their approval on that. I'll just advise and let them know. Now, you know we have a website. I think you know that.
Yes, I was trying to, I guess you don't have a link to Facebook. I went to the website, and that's where I got the screenshot for the Falling for Stars. And
oh, yes, uh-huh.
I didn't take your information, like your telephone number. I just took, you know, I wasn't too sure what to do. I just took, you know, it says Falling for Stars. It says a nonprofit organization, Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame official site, and has your name, John Hagner, founder, CEO.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't put up your telephone number and such. I just took that to show people what you're part of, too. So, you know, if there's something that I do, I wasn't too sure about giving out your telephone number because I'm very careful about things like that, you know, anything, unless people tell me that I can. So until someone says anything, I don't want to give any contact information out unless they go to the websites themselves.
Yeah, well, it's all right for you to give that information with the phone number.
Okay.
That's the only phone number we have, cell phone number. And if there's a problem that I have with anybody calling, I'll just say, well, you got to talk to Shelley about this.
Okay. I promote pretty well. I've been doing many shows now within a year. I've done over 105 shows. People think I was crazy. And my boss, she goes like this, because I'm affiliated with another radio show, but I run my own radio show. And she says, Shelly, I think you should, you know, you do so much with films and other things. She says, I think it's okay to just do two a week. I do Sundays and Wednesday nights. And I don't know, the first year, I didn't even expect any of this. I thought, okay, I'm going to do this show. It's just going to be a few weeks. A few weeks turned into a few months and over a year. Okay. And I'm getting more and more people, and it's a wonderful feeling. I feel very blessed to be able to do this. I'm very happy.
Well, I appreciate that, and I can understand that you're real busy too, but I appreciate you being accepting my invitation to be on our board of advisors, and I'll inform the fellow who handles our website to include your name, okay?
Okay.
And Steve Lambert.
That is great.
Steve Lambert. Yeah, Steve Lambert's on that board, too, board of advisors.
Oh, yes, my ninja pal.
Yeah, he was up here on the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade back in 1988. He came into the Hall of Fame when we were open with Vic Armstrong, who was Harrison Ford's double and stunt coordinator. And he came in with Vic Armstrong and Vince Dedrick Sr. and two or three other guys. And we had some pictures taken, and I showed them around the Hall of Fame and everything. And when we wound up in our theater room, which I called the West Wing, and that's where we showed movies to groups of people and all of that. So I said to Steve, how much you weigh? So whatever he told me, I said, okay. And my secretary had our video camera, and I said, Steve, I'm going to lift you up over my head, okay? We'll videotape this. So he says, oh, okay. So we did that. I've got that on video and some stills, too. And on our website, I'm starting a Hall of Fame newsletter. I have been doing it for years and years, since the beginning of time of me being involved with the Hall of Fame and everything and stunts. And we're going to start it up again on our website. We're calling it Falling for Stars News. And this will feature the stories of the old guys and the new breed of stunt guys, too. So I found some real neat color pictures of when Vic Armstrong and Steve and the guys visited. And we'll do a little paragraph story on that time they visited. So that's going to be nice.
Oh, yes. I could give you lots of inputs of, you know, following stunts. The people, you know, I've got a lot of input about the stunt guys that I know, that I grew up watching, too, that I actually know by names. I don't know if you consider people like Jackie Chan, Tony Jaa, there's many different people, even stunt guys here in America, but some of them come to other countries and they've done Hollywood films. And I see their movements and their flows. And people that are stunt people, they're actually, you know, from many different ages, they use their body. You know, that's their work of art, is their body. And that's what they're doing. They're using it in a way where, you know, that's their work. They're a product. They're promoting themselves. And when I see someone do stunts or martial arts, I love the flow, the movements, the punches, the kicks, like everything in combination, even with weapons. If you're using guns, you know, archery, the forms that people use, I love that. I know it's not work to me. It's really an art form, and you're using your body, and that's stuff that I can understand because I've been thrown in films, and I've had no padding or nothing. I've hit the ground, and I've bounced off the ground, and that was a wake-up call, and that was for a short film, and when I hit that ground, I was like, oh, this stuff really hurts. It made me step into stunt people's shoes because I'd be like seeing all this stuff and you guys make it look so easy. So when I started getting into it and started training a little bit in martial arts and being thrown and I'm going, hitting the ground, I'm going, how do you guys do it? You know, so I have input because I've actually, maybe I haven't done exactly what you guys have done, but I have experienced on independent films doing some fight scenes and doing stuff now, so I can actually give input, you know, as, you know, on the Falling for Stars, having that experience to be able to talk about it, not just viewing it, but actually been in you guys' shoes a little bit. You know what I mean?
I wish you would do that because I have the greatest admiration for Jackie Chan. He is on, he's one of our honorary inductees. Jackie Chan is.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
I'm giggling like a little kid right now. It's like, I grew up watching Jackie.
Oh yes. I never met him, but oh yes, I have the greatest admiration for him and his ability. You know, they came up here, studio came up here with an actor named David Carradine.
Yeah?
And David Carradine did a TV series called Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was in 1989. And so I knew the studio was coming up to do a movie called Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat. So I asked the people over at the film commission, well, who's the stunt coordinator? So they told me it was Bobby Bragg. I said, Bobby Bragg? Well, I know him personally. So I said, you have his phone number? So they gave me his phone. I called Bobby up, and Bobby had come to visit the Hall of Fame when we were open in a town called Banning, California, near Palm Springs. And we became very good friends then. So Bobby was a stunt coordinator in the movie. And I called him up and I said, hey, you're coming up here to coordinate the movie Sundown. He said, yeah, I'll be up there next week. And I said, well, if you could fit me in, I'd appreciate it. He says, well, yeah, we'll do something. So he came up the following week and he says, you're going to double David Hedison. And he's going to do a big fight. And I said, great. So we went out on the location. It was all night shots. I did 4 days. It was all night shots. And we went out on location, and I went into the wardrobe trailer, and they started making me up, costuming me to double David Carradine. So Bobby's there, and David Carradine walks in. He says, hey, what's this guy going to do? So Bobby says, oh, he's going to double you in the big fight. You know what David said? He says, nobody does my kung fu fighting but me.
Really?
So Bobby Bragg says, okay, John, get the costume off. You're going to double John Ireland. And he was that one of the heavy, called vampires in the film, in the movie. So sure enough, I got to double John Ireland. And interestingly enough, after the shoot was done, 4 days later, or my part of it, I talked to Bobby and I said, "Hey, Bobby, who did the fight for Kennedy?" He says, "The director scrubbed it. They didn't do the fight." So
really,
so David didn't want somebody to double him. So anyway, I did work the movie anyway. So that was good.
Sweet. So like, looking into more names, I have quite a few other names, and I wanted to bring up at least a couple more during the show. The next name that I found, Buddy Joe Hooker.
Yeah, another, he's a good stuntman, a very good stuntman, like Ronnie Rondell, and other members like Ronnie and Buddy Joe and Oneidum. They formed another organization called Stunts Unlimited. And Buddy Joe is still around, and we footprinted him. We did footprint of Hal Needham and Ronnie Rondell and people like that. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, Buddy Joe Hooker is one of the best stuntmen around.
And so does he still kind of work in the business like you, or?
I don't know. I haven't been checking up on what's going on with him lately. He may still be doing it, but I don't know. But I'm pretty sure Ronnie Rondell, they moved to Missouri several years ago. But we are
mm-hmm.
in contact, like I said. But Buddy came up when they were doing the movie Thelma and Louise. And so did
oh.
Ronnie Rondell and about 30 or 40 other stunt people. And I got to see Buddy Joe then, and we footprinted him and a bunch of other actors and stunt people. We footprinted 400 people so far in cement.
Wow.
And that is probably twice as many as the Chinese theater in Hollywood, on Hollywood Boulevard.
I'll have to
but
see
most,
it to believe it. I'll have to see that.
If you want to see the footprints, I'll tell you one thing. They are 24 inches by 3. No, 20. No, let me see. Yeah. 2 feet by 30 inches, and they're 2 inches thick, and they weigh 150 pounds. You can come up and help me move them anytime.
Oh, that would be a good workout.
But, yeah, we have 400 of them, and I think the Chinese theater has maybe 250 or something like that. But most of ours are stunt people. But we do have Charlton Hestons and famous people like that, too.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
We used to have a lot of these concrete blocks, stepping stones of the people. Out
hmm.
front as like a walkway for the
yeah.
Visitors. And I'd like to get it back to that so we can start doing more ceremonies of footprintings and inductions of, like I said, the new breed of people. See,
yeah.
you would be one of the new breed.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Are you there? Why are you you're laughing as if I just took... Yeah, well, you could do that, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like, It's kind of, I just feel so lucky, and I'm happy because everything I've gone through. I don't want to bring it all up, but I feel like I'm getting all these wishes. I've wished so long for many things, and I feel like a little girl. You know, like when you're so happy and. You know, I never became bitter. I'm just very happy, and I feel like a little kid on Christmas. That's what I feel like, and that's the feeling that I have inside, and I feel like I'm just going to explode with this energy, this happy energy, and I giggle. I tell people, I don't know what it is. I'm kind of lame, like saying I giggle like a little schoolgirl because I'm happy.
Well, I'm very glad that you are, and I appreciate that. Would you be able to send me a CD of this program?
I can try to get it downloaded because the link, I mean, I can try to see, I'll talk to my boss, Charlie, see if we can get it downloaded for you and do send it to you. For now, you can there's a link on your wall, on your Facebook wall,
mm-hmm.
and you can click on it to any time because it's archived afterwards, and then anybody that can click on to the link, anybody can listen to it at any time.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, that'll be good. That'll be good.
Yeah, and
so
if there's some people... I'm sorry?
No, so you could let me know more about that later on then when you know when it's going to be... will it be airing sometime, or will this be it, or what?
Well, no, this, as soon as it's downloaded into the computer afterwards, you can click onto the link anytime. It's going to be always there. All my shows are on demand and featured, and you can find all my shows and on the Blog Talk Radio on your Facebook page. What I usually do is with my guest, before the show, I put a link so anybody can listen to it live, And then afterwards, when the show is over, I redo the link again and I put it on their wall again. So sometimes the first link doesn't work because it's live. So after it's recorded and downloaded, I can take that link and post it on your wall, and then you can listen to it anytime.
Oh, that's great. Okay, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you ever want to bring up, you know, about the Hall of Fame, we can have you back on the show. If we want to do a fundraiser for the show, anything, just get a hold of me. Anything you can think of that you want me to help out, I would be glad. Write some stuff for you. I can even, if you have a little promo, I can read it on the air. I mean, anything you want, I'll be so happy and honored to be able to help you.
Oh, that'd be fine. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just doing my part, and I have so many people that I've written down, and I'm looking at the time, and I can't even believe it's already like 10:30, so I'm trying to fit so much stuff in here as I can. Yeah, so there's about another half hour we have. See, doesn't it go by fast?
Oh, it does. It sure does. You sure you don't want me to sing? I'm giving you the opportunity to tell me yes or no.
Yes, I want. Can you serenade me? I would love that.
No, it's too late. No, forget that.
Oh, not a little taste, a little like do re mi or something.
No, I'll send you. Okay. Every time it rains pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune falling all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. That's it.
I actually know that song. Yeah, I'm here. I know that song. There was a film, and they played that song, Pennies from Heaven, and I think it in a film, I think it was in the 90s, though, and it was a really sad film.
Steve, what's that comedian's name? Steve? He's a very famous comedian that shows up on the talk shows on TV. Anyway, yeah, he starred in it. But then they did the original way back in the early talkies, but that's the song I learned from way back when.
I'm going to have to start singing that, Pennies from Heaven, because I'm trying to save money for my own film. I'm trying to, I have, I'm doing a short film, which is my own thank you to Jackie Chan, and it's something where it's just very short. I'm doing my own fights, I'm playing the lead, and it's called The Dishwasher. And it's something that I'm, you know, I'm an underdog, and I dream of working with Jackie Chan, and it has that type of feel to the film. So it turns out, you know, an underdog, my life is boring, I'm a dishwasher, and then, like, bad guy comes in, and we have this little fight outside. So as soon as I have the money for that, I can shoot it. So it's something I'm looking forward to do. So now I'm going to be seeing Pennies from Heaven, and as soon as I get off the show, I'm going to YouTube, and I'm actually going to bring this song up, and I'm going to fall asleep singing the song Pennies from Heaven.
Oh, that happens a lot with me, with songs.
Yeah, and it's funny because I do know the song. I think who you might have been referring to, it might have been Steve. Is it Steve Martin?
That's who it was, Steve Martin, right. Yes.
Okay.
He's a fantastic banjo picker, too.
Steve Martin
is. Yeah.
I'm trying to picture, didn't he have in a skit, he had some sort of, it was a striped shirt. I don't know which film it was in. I remember a couple of his films in the 80s. There was one that was really funny, and I think they called it The Jerk.
That's right.
I don't know if it was in that. And The funny thing is, because viewer discretion, they had to, the dog's name in the jerk was S-H-S Head, right? So in the, the show, when it was like on Channel 56, they had to call the dog stupid. So it was actually the dog's name was a swear, and I remember that. I know there was much more to the film. I think Bernadette Peters was in the film.
Yes.
Girlfriend was in it, and, you know, it was just, he just plays these crazy characters. He does his own slapstick. He did Roxanne, he was a firefighter, and he had like a big nose. He fell in love, I think, with Daryl Hannah, and he's been doing, I know, work for many years. And the funny thing is, I remember working for a doggy daycare in Boston, and I used to take care of animals. And we ended up taking care of his dog, and I think it was a Labrador. I'm pretty sure they said this is Steve Martin's pet. And it was a high boutique, and we had all crazy animals and stuff. And I think it was, I can't remember. I know he had a lab, and it was like his personality. It was just like Steve Martin's personality. And I guess they say that the pets are just like the owners.
Right.
Yeah. And a couple of the names I did want to bring up, I was trying to look up also, I think women, if I, I think two names or a couple names I did find, Jenny Apper.
Apper? Yeah, Jeannie Apper. Is that who you mean?
I think that's, is it A-P-P-E-R, Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E?
It's J-E-A-N-N-I-E, and Epper is E-P-P-E-R, Jeannie Epper. That's, yeah. And she and her, the Epper family are very famous for being one of the legendary and successful stunt families, still around. They did a TV series called Wonder Woman, and she doubled for Wonder Woman.
Oh my gosh! Really?
Yes. Oh yes.
Oh my God! I loved Wonder Woman. I used to have Wonder Woman underoos when I was little. Not that I should be saying this in public. I mean, I wouldn't be able to wear them now. I might get arrested in public. But I have a Wonder Woman Barbie doll. It's unopened. I do. I'm not kidding. I have a Wonder Woman Barbie doll unopened. So, yeah, I love Wonder Woman. My cup has Wonder Woman on it. And, yeah, I grew up watching. I wanted to be Wonder Woman. And that show, the weirdest thing is, I'm doing a film called Valkyr, and I'm actually playing a Wonder Woman. I dreamed of always wanting to play Wonder Woman, and I tried to remember Warner Brothers were trying to do Wonder Woman when I was in my 20s, so I tried to send in a picture and a resume. I don't think it has been able to take off, but I've always wanted to play Wonder Woman, and here I am 20 years later. I'm playing a Wonder Woman character as a lead. So I've loved Wonder Woman since I was a little girl. So it's just so many connections. I'm just like, John, you're not going to believe my jaw has been on the floor since you've been talking to me. It's just like I'm sitting here just like drooling over the stories you've been telling me. I am so blown away.
Well, Jeannie Apper and her sister, Stephanie Epper, and Margot, and their father, Johnny Epper, were some of the greatest stunt people in the business. Johnny Epper doubled for people like Gary Cooper and Jimmy Stewart and people like that. But we had a footprinting ceremony one time and footprinted almost all of the family with the kids and everything. We still have their footprints in cement.
Wow.
Yeah. They're wonderful people.
I'm so blown away right now. I hope that someday, where are the footprints? Are they in California?
No, everything is here in Moab, Utah. We have three large storages that they're 12 by 30 feet long. We have three of those, and the majority of the footprints are someplace else here in Moab on one of our family's property. So we have everything intact, and that's where I spend almost every other day, going out and reorganizing and cataloging and all of that memorabilia. The majority of the stunt people and the actors that gave me things are gone. They've passed away. And there's only a few legends left in the business. And people like Ronnie Rondell and Buddy Joe Hooker, I put them in the class of being legendary stunt people. They did a lot of the creative stuff after the older guys did it. And they changed it a bit and created their own. Now it's a lot of stuff is computerized, and that's fantastic. There's nothing wrong with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bunch of stunt people that cannot be categorized as daredevils or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
A good stunt man, a good stunt woman, never consider themselves daredevils. They always felt if you couldn't do the same stunt over twice or several times, then, you know, you're not a stuntman if you couldn't do it more than once. And I have nothing against daredevils and all of that. A dear friend of mine, Dar Robinson, he was a stuntman, but he also was a person who loved to create the most outstanding stunts and unbelievable stunts, and that's what he did. But we footprinted him in cement too. So it's that kind of a thing that the stunt business has changed tremendously, but not drastically. And it's changed to the point of you're always going to need stunt people. No matter how much a computer can do, you always need stunt people. Because that's what they do, and that's a stunt person has to be a person who can make a dangerous situation look dangerous, but be able to walk away from it. That's the way I've always looked at it, and that's the way majority of the great stunt people have always thought too. I've known and met many stunt legends and worked with a few, and I'm just happy and proud that I had the opportunity.
Oh, we definitely, I'm going to have you back on the show because I just have a list, and if I can mention a couple more because it's just, we're getting closer, running out of time. I told you I can talk forever with you, John. It's like I wish I had 4 hours of time to talk, and if I can bring up a couple other people. Next person, Glenn Randall.
What's the last name?
Randall, R-A-N-D-E-L-L.
Oh, Glenn Randall?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, sure, Glenn Randall. Glenn Randall was from a famous horse family. And they used to, they had stables for the studios, stables, horses and such. And the movie, the first Indiana Jones, which was Raiders of the Lost Ark, there was a stunt in there where they rolled a truck. Didn't roll it, they turned it over. And Glenn Randall was the driver of the truck. And that was probably one of the first times they ever did that stunt. And the way they did that stunt was, and I don't know, maybe Glenn and OG, I don't know who rigged it, but the way they caused the truck to turn over was they put a hole in the floor of the truck, and then they take a log from a telephone pole, and it's about 3 or 4 feet long, and they actually put it into a cannon. and they shoot the log into the ground, and it forces the truck to turn over. That's something like the way they did it. Technically, it's not exactly right, but that's the way they started doing rolling the cars, and then they got into doing that more tremendously and rolling a car several times and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing a John Wayne movie called McHugh, which is not a Western. There's a detective movie. He was a detective in the movie. And they were doing a chase, car chases on along the beach. But they had to test the cannon rule. And he had to test it, the car. And so Hal Needham was one of the stuntmen. And like I said, he's with Ronnie Rundell and Buddy Joe Hooker and those fellas. And he was the driver of the car that was to be rolled over with the cannon roll. And so they did it a couple times or one time, and it rolled over. And they said, or he said, well, it doesn't blow me up high enough or something. So they put more shot or more powder in the cannon. And when they did, the car flipped up and went up about 20 or 30 feet in the air and came down. And he wound up in the hospital after that with a punctured lung and punctured this and that and broken this and that.
Oh.
I remember I went over and visited with him at the Antelope Valley Hospital because we lived in Palmdale at the time, and which is just before you get to the Antelope Valley Hospital in Lancaster, California. And I went over and visited with him, and he was explaining what happened. He says, I wanted to put more shot in it, and they did, and I went up, and here I am.
Oh, my gosh. He really sounds real, like, crazy.
but you see, they were not daredevils. They would test it, and if it wasn't what they wanted, they put more to it to get what they wanted and so forth. And they got what they wanted. But that's pretty much how it was back in the real old days and then the old days, and now you're into the present.
Yeah, it keeps getting more advanced, but you think about where it all started, and if they say, you know, like they go back, the grandfathers of the stunt world, you look at what they do, and that's where everything started, and they have a lot of, like, wires and such, all the CG, but you still got to think about, you got to still kind of be in shape for that, because I heard on a set that I was part of with this company recently where they were doing another film, and they had the wires, and they couldn't really do it. It's really hard, and I think the guy, I don't know if he got hurt in the head or something, not really bad. I don't know the whole story, and they says I don't think they could have done the stunts. And it takes a lot of work to do anything in the wires. I says, I would love to try to learn about the wires, but it's harder than what you would imagine, because I went on this thing with the bungee thing, and they had it around my waist, and they had it coming from the right and the left and something coming down. It had this circle thing, so it had this bouncy thing, and I would jump, and this was just something I wanted to see. So as soon as I got up in the air and I was trying to do flips in the air, and it's actually a lot harder than you think. So as I can imagine, it's a lot of work. That's definitely...
You have to be in top physical condition, and I'm sure you are from what you are doing, the physical work that you do. But real quick, talking about cables and wires and things, do we have another second or two?
Yeah, I think we have about 10 minutes left.
Okay, this will take two.
Okay.
Okay? A stuntman named Duke Green. They were doing a movie over at Warner Brothers called The Flame and the Arrow with a famous actor named Burt Lancaster, who was from the circus and did acrobatics and all of that. But in the movie, it's like a Robin Hood movie, and they needed somebody. The actor was playing a monk in the movie, who supposedly is in the forest, and he steps into a noose that the bad guys in the forest want to trap this monk. So he steps into the noose, and it pulls him upside down. That was the stunt. So they hired Duke Green. So Duke Green, being a great acrobat and high diver and all of that, double-soled guy, was playing the monk. And so he was walking along, and he steps into the noose, and it trips the cable that the noose wraps around his ankle and pulls him upside down. So it started to catapult like it's a tree branch that's just waving up and down, you know, because of his body being hanging from a branch or something. And what happened was it was a cable that was attached to this simulated tree. And the cable snapped, and Duke crashed down on the back of his neck and broke his neck, and his stunt career ended.
Oh.
He didn't die as a result of it, but he was out of stunt work. And when you're talking about wires and things like that, this was way back then, 1946 or 47. They were doing a stunt like that, and he almost died from it. But I can understand you're kind of restricted a lot when you're you've got these wires. You're tied up to these wires, you know.
Yeah, it's really, it is crazy. And you see, you know, like Jackie mm-hmm. and Jet Li and Michelle, the people, they make it look so simple because they're flying and they're going through the trees. The way they have this set, it makes it look like they're just running. And I'm like, how do they do that? You know, maybe it has something to do with martial arts and how they're physically fit, but the amazing thing about these gentlemen, like Jackie and such, he's now 58 years old, and I still respect him because a lot of people, you know, Jackie's done a lot, and they say, well, Jackie's getting old and blah, 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 this and that, and I'm sitting here going, you know, I know Jackie's older, and for people, you know, saying someone's getting old like they don't count anymore, Jackie Chan, for his age, he can still climb up the side of a building, you know, one or two stories. He may not be able to do five or six, but I would like to see someone even younger like myself. I can't do what Jackie does, you know, when he's doing it like he's pot monkey, and I still, you know, I still look at them the same way. I still have that same profound respect, and they'll never lose, you know, even if as they get older, like guys get older, and I just have that same respect I did as a child. And it's just amazing.
Yes, I do. I feel the same way about Jackie Chan. I have the highest respect for him. And I remember Davy Sharp was 58 when he was doubling for Tony Curtis in a movie called The Great Race,
mm-hmm.
which I had the opportunity to work in that. And Davy was 57, and he was doubling Tony Curtis in the big barroom fight, which took 2 weeks to shoot. And Davy did a dive over a railing from a balcony and bulldogged three or four stunt guys on the staircase and crashed through a breakaway wall. And that was Davy at 57. And I'm 85, and May 21st, I worked in a movie. This was a movie, a biblical movie for the Mormon Church. And they auditioned me and hired me. They needed somebody between the age of 50 and 60. And so I said, well, I'm 85. I'm 85, and I could do that. So they hired me, and I worked a day for them, and it's called the New Testament Phase 3. And it's not mm-hmm. a major motion picture, but it's a church movie that'll come out on the Internet pretty soon. And I worked the one day and did a gag in it that I would consider, if I was getting paid top SAG scale, that would be considered a stunt. So now, between you and me and the listeners, I consider myself to be the oldest working stuntman.
Yeah, I did not know. When you said, when we were talking on the phone, and I was seeing some of your pictures, and you said you were 85, I did not believe that, because I'm sitting there going, he's still, I was like, there's no way you are 85 years old. I thought you were 20 to 25 years younger. I was like, he's pulling my leg. And I think,
well,
believe
look
it or
at,
not,
the,
I thought you were younger.
Well, look at the pictures again with the magnifying glass and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I just, you're amazing, and I'm praying that I will have the strength. I mean, you know, being half your age, you just blow me away with you're still working, and, you know, you're still young. You're still young and hot, and you know what I think it is? I think being a stuntman has kept you young at heart. I think that's what it is. I swear, that's your secret.
Well, I feel like that too. I also feel that I think I know my limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I used to do 40 years ago, and I know what I can do now. So it's not what I used to do, but it's what I can do. When somebody, if I had the opportunity ever again, and I hope it does happen, they would say, "Well, could you do this?" If I can't, I'll tell them right off, because you don't tell them you can do something you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
As a stunt person, you never do that. You've got to be sure. You don't say, "Well, I think I can do that," because that means you're not sure. So don't tell them you think you can do it. I've never done it. I've turned down one or two jobs in the years that I was full time in the business, only because I knew. In other words, I'm not a horseman. And so I know the guys who were, the stunt guys who were and are, and I know I could never do anything that these guys do. So I got a call one time and said, "Well, we need heavy do with a bunch of guys, some fast chases." I said, "I don't do horse work."
Mm-hmm.
You come up front, right out front, and you say yes or no or that, you know.
Yeah, it's for safety, too. You want to be smart, you know, and not,
yeah.
you know, show something that you can't. You want to show your strengths, and it'll show on film. Because if you
yeah,
can't
chances,
do it, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Chances are it wouldn't come out right anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you took something you were not sure and positive you could do, and chances are you're not going to do it the way they're going to want you to do it, because everything
mm-hmm.
has to be done to a camera, you know, not a rodeo type thing where you get on a wild horse and ride it or don't ride it. You know, back in 1938, Errol Flynn over at Warner Brothers was doing a movie called Charge of the Light Brigade, and they needed 100 riders to ride full force, full speed on horses, 50 coming and 50 going at each other, and then some what they called running W falls, where you actually trip the horse's front legs and make them fall. Back in those days, they've outlawed
mm-hmm.
that in 1938. So they hired about 100 people. Now, there were not 100 stunt people around, so they hired a lot of people from rodeo and a lot of riders who were good riders and all of that, and they did the same. And in the charge, out of 100 people, 8 riders were killed doing the running W falls, and 38 horses they had to put down or they were killed, they broke their necks. So
wow.
Then the SPCA, the animal people, came in and said, "You can't do that anymore." But all 8 of the riders, none of them were stunt people. They came from rodeo.
Hmm.
And in rodeo, like I said, you get on a horse or a bull and you ride it for 8 seconds and that's it. But this is a thing that goes on and on and on and on for minutes. And so some got trampled by other riders and all that, but eight people died from that one. It's still in the movie. You still see the charge in the movie.
Wow.
And 38 horses they had to put down. But my friend Yakima Knut, who used to do a lot of running W's, told me he never hurt a horse doing the tripping the horse to fall. But that's just a little bit of the history that tells me the guys back in those days were not daredevils.
Yeah, and I definitely, John, I definitely have to say this was a really great night, and I can't believe the time has fly by, and it's now the end of the show, and it's just everything. I have so much more to talk about other people and hear more stories, so I hope you'll be a guest on my show again.
Well, I hope so, and please call on me anytime, and if you want to in the beginning, say don't talk so much, I won't.
No, I love it. Believe me, I feel like a little kid. You just don't even believe. I wish I could have videotaped me because my jaw has been on the floor the whole time you've been talking. You've totally blown me away. I'm just so thankful that you were a guest on my show. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to having you as a guest on my show another time. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Would you send me by email your mailing address?
Yes, I most definitely will.
So I can send you my letter of accepting you on our board of advisors, okay?
Okay, that sounds great.
And may I, did you see the movie Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly?
A long time ago. Me to watch it again?
That was the title of the movie, and that's the title of the song that he sang. May I go off singing two lines of that?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes, go right ahead.
All right, I want to say goodbye and thank you so much, Shelley, okay?
Oh, thank
you. And in the meantime, I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling. I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart. And I'm ready for love. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a good night, John. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was such an awesome show. And I cannot believe I just got invited to be a board of advisors on the – I mean, this is – I just don't know what to say. It's the board of advisor for what – John has founded, and I'm bringing it up once again because I want to make sure I'm saying it correctly. Falling for Stars, a nonprofit organization, Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame, and he just asked me to come on board and be a board of advisor on this, and I just don't know what to say. I just feel so honored, and you know, if anybody out there, remember how I always say, if you have a dream out there, and you know, if I'm out here doing my dreams, you know, you're as good as anybody else. So you just remember that, and I look forward to getting more guests on my show, having John back as a guest. And thank you all for listening to my shows. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And as Jackie Chan would say in his language, if I can say it, because it's X-I-E-X-I-E, shishé. And well, everyone, have a good night. I am so out of time right now. Sleep well tonight. All right. Bye-bye.